From the shadows of the radio towers, this is the Gay PHX Podcast. Your community radio on demand.
It's gonna be a good day. And everything is going to go my way. It's gonna be a good day. The sun is shining bright and it's here to stay.
This week on the Gay PHX Podcast, it's been a beautiful weekend here in Phoenix, and while a lot of the valley has been out enjoying the sunshine, we've been behind the scenes, knee-deep in code, tuning systems, building tools, rolling out upgrades across Gay PHX that you may not see, but hopefully you'll start to feel. And yes, we're still working on getting the site out of beta, and yes, it's just us two guys, Alan and I, behind the curtains, working on this thing piece by piece, so thank you for your patience while we keep improving it. Because Gay PHX isn't about me, Alan, Brian, it's about you. It's about our community, our groups, our events, our stories. And if you've got something happening, submit it. Come on air. Tell your story. The more voices we bring to this space, the stronger Phoenix becomes. And if you missed the Grit pop-up party this weekend, don't worry. There's another one already on the calendar for March. You can check out the next event and grab tickets at gritaz.com. And coming up on today's show, we're sitting down with Jeff and EJ, the voices behind the book, The Old Man and the Queer, the story that started out in a barber chair, a retired mayor in his 70s and a queer barber in his 20s, two people from completely different generations and life experiences who started having the kinds of conversations that most people avoid, about identity, about accountability, and about listening. What grew out of that relationship became a powerful story about change, friendship, and the possibility that even deep divides can start to close one honest conversation at a time. But first, let's find out what's happening around the valley. Here's your Den Daddy Brian with his Hot Three.
You're listening to Gay PHX, where community comes first.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Brian's Hot Three, where nightlife isn't just something to do, it's evidence. Evidence that Phoenix gathers, that our community shows up, that even the desert sun tries to slow us down, and the queer calendar keeps us humming like a neon sign after midnight. It's your Desert Den Daddy Brian coming to you with this week's field report from the streets, bars, parks, bingo halls of Phoenix. Places where the drinks are cold, the laughter is loud, and the stories are absolutely not safe for early bedtime. This week, the city reads like a perfect little spectrum of community life. A morning that reminds us of why showing up matters, an afternoon where the chili is spicy and the personalities are spicier, and a bingo hall where the bears gather and someone is absolutely going to shout the wrong number with full confidence. So hydrate, stretch those social muscles, and let's see what's heating up in Phoenix this week. Hot pick number one, Arizona AIDS Walk Run and Roll at Indian Steel Park on Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to noon. One of Arizona's biggest community gatherings returns this weekend as Arizona's AIDS Walk Run and Roll takes over Indian Steel Park. You can tackle the 5K run, stroll the 2.5 walk, or roll the course as whatever pace fits your morning vibe. Before the race even begins, the park fills, the food trucks arrive, entertainment and community partners showing up for a cause that continues to matter. It's a powerful reminder that Phoenix knows how to come together for something bigger than a night. Hot pick number two, Maria Hooch Chili and Salsa Cook-Off at Paddle's Bunkhouse, Saturday, noon to 4. Just when you think the day can't get any hotter, the annual Maria Hooch Chili and Salsa Cook-Off fires up at the Bunkhouse. Competitors roll in with their boldest chili and zestiest salsa recipes, hoping to win bragging rights while the crowd samples and judges with suspicious levels of enthusiasm. Competitors roll in with their boldest chili and zestiest salsa recipes, hoping to win bragging rights for the crowd. Expect appearances from Dick Skinny, Alexander Strike, Ryder Gently, Pup Oreo, Black Widow, and Divina Ross, which means the personalities may be even spicier than the food. $10 gets you in the door and into the middle of the chaos. Hot pick number three is Bear Bingo for Bears of the West at The Rock, Saturday, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. And if your idea of a relaxing afternoon involves a bingo card and a room full of bears, Bear Bingo with Olivia Gardens has you covered. $10 gets you 6 games with 3 chances to win on every card, or grab the 3-pack for $20 and tempt fate like a seasoned professional. Olivia keeps the energy rolling, the crowd keeps the sass flowing, and the moment someone yells bingo, the entire room becomes instant family. This week, Hot 3 in Phoenix, 3 different vibes, 3 different crowds, 3 chances to show up. Phoenix, that's your Hot 3, a morning of purpose, an afternoon of spice, and a bingo hall full of bears who absolutely refuse to whisper. That's the rhythm of the city. Meaningful, messy, joyful, and just a little louder than it probably needs to be. Get out there this week. Support the causes that matter. Taste something bold and maybe shout a number or two across a crowded room. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing the show. And thank you for being part of the community that keeps Phoenix pulsing after dark. Until next time, coming to you from the shadows of the radio towers, I'm Brian, your Desert Den Daddy, and that's what's hot.
Want all the details? Head over to GabePHX.com, your one-stop shop for queer events, promos, and everything happening in the valley.
This is what community sounds like.
This is Amanda Renfrew, enrolled agent with The Tax Person, with your tax year countdown. Domestic partners aren't treated like spouses on federal taxes, even if you share housing or finances. Medical expenses, property ownership, and credits work differently. Planning now prevents expensive surprises. Get support with a free 15-minute consult at thetaxperson.com and look for me as The Tax Person on socials.
More stories, more voices, more pride. You're tuned in to the Gay PHX Podcast.
Today on Gay PHX, you're about to hear a story about real change. A retired former mayor in his late 70s, a queer barber in his 20s. Different generations, different politics, different lived realities. What started out as a haircut became conversations. Those conversations became trust, and that trust dismantled years of bigotry. Honestly, slowly, and without excuses. Their journey has become a book called The Old Man and the Queer, a dual memoir about accountability, friendship, and what happens when people actually listen. And now, it's my honor to welcome to the rainbow-tinted microphone, Jeff Comochero and EJ Radford. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today. What was the first moment that you realized this wasn't just small talk?
It was one day not too far into us doing our first couple of haircuts together where we really began talking in a more honest light and just getting to know each other a little further than surface level.
Yeah, I think EJ has a way of making you feel comfortable. And so I think that led to what became ultimately some very honest and frank discussions.
So set the stage. How did it start out? Jeff, you walk in. Is it your first time at this place, salon? Is it a barber? Where is it you go to where you meet EJ?
Okay, let me start at the beginning. My grown son and I were given a gift of an afternoon at a men's hair spa, which I never heard of. And it involved a haircut, hot towel, steam shave, and generally men's grooming that you don't, for most guys, at least for me, something I was not used to. Usually wouldn't pamper myself that way.
Right.
And so they took me out in a room in the back and I was getting worked on and my son was being worked on in the front, a little more public area. And I got finished first and I came out to see how he was doing. And I saw EJ cutting his hair. And that was the first time I saw EJ. I'd use the word appalled. I don't like that word, but at what I saw, obviously someone who looked very young. My thought was it was a 15-year-old boy. That was my guess. But with tattoos all over and piercings all over and being an old conservative guy like me, it just didn't sit well. And I remember saying to myself, I would never let this person touch me. And when I got home that night, I felt terrible about meet myself and what I was thinking, because I've never seen myself as having any kind of prejudice in my life. In fact, I pride myself on that. But yet here I was lying to myself. And so the next time I needed a haircut, whatever it was, 4 or 5 weeks later, I told myself I was going to book with EJ. And I'm not quite sure still if it was out of guilt or curiosity, or exactly what it was, but I was determined to do it, and I did. And that was our first actual meeting.
And what gave you that self-reflection about the day?
Because you said it was after you got back home. Was it immediate? Was it when you were reviewing the day? What made you rethink those thoughts?
Oh, I think it was in the evening. My days are generally pretty busy. I've wound down some now as I've gotten older, but and so I don't always have a lot of time just to sit around and think about things. But that evening I did, and it just was unsettling. I grew up, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, in an underprivileged area, very mixed in all ways, ethnically, economically, religions. And there was no prejudice. We all got along. Nobody had anything, so nobody was jealous of anybody. And there was plenty of crime, but it wasn't specific to any particular group. It was all over. And that's the way I was raised. As I progressed in my life, especially when I wound up with a career in local politics, I liked the fact that I was able to see everybody in an equal light. But I hadn't really considered that light in terms of LGBTQ, in terms of, well, frankly, somebody who looked like EJ looked. And yet I was upset with myself that I was letting that affect how I might feel about this person who I didn't know at all at the time. I didn't like that.
And what assumption were you most wrong about?
Wow, that's an interesting question. When I was growing up, people with a lot of tattoos, especially, that was one of my biggest hangups, was the tattoos, because that was convicts and sailors. The only people I knew who had a tattoo were those who came back from the concentration camps, because I was born right at the end of World War II, and they had 7 numbers tattooed on the inside of their left forearm that were identification numbers that the Nazis had put on them to identify them in the concentration camps. And we were schooled when I was very young that you didn't get a tattoo because it represented something that was terrible. Mm. And yet I'm not naive either. We live in a generation where I'm probably one of the few people I know who doesn't have a tattoo. But that was off-putting. And what changed was, I won't say it was instant, but after a couple of haircut appointments, because I kept going back because I got a great haircut. And I began to realize that EJ was a person of integrity, very competent, and just a very nice person that I was getting to. And so from there, we became friends.
And EJ, for you, on your side, as he was coming, did you know any of these internal conflicts? Could you tell anything, or were you just being yourself, polite? What was it like on your end?
It wasn't until a little while later when I had asked Jeff how he had ended up finding us at the shop that I learned a little bit of his side of the backstory. But for me personally, it was a day like any other. I'm a barber, I have new clients, and I try to treat everybody with respect. And as a human, I think I see people and I might categorize or make assumptions about them just based on their looks as well. So I, in my own way, I was guilty of it as well. But I definitely saw Jeff and I assumed that he was going to be who he used to be, frankly. And so I just, in the very beginning, the first, at everybody's first experience in my shop, I really want to create an environment where they just feel they can rest and take a load off. It's not just a safe space, but a relaxing environment that everybody feels welcome. And in doing that, I think that Jeff was happy with his haircut and he was willing to come back. And it's usually the second and third appointments that I'll try to get to know you a little bit more. And whether somebody's interested in doing that, that's completely up to them. But with Jeff and I, it seemed to be just a natural conversation that continued to flow. And as we got to know each other a little bit more, and I feel like really began to form some sort of a friendship even before all of this, honesty, especially being trans, a lot of people haven't met trans people in person.
Or they have and they didn't realize it. I'll say that.
Yeah, exactly. So when people know that I'm trans, and a lot of human nature is curiosity and just wanting to understand things. When people come with respect and just showing basic human curiosity, I try to meet them there. And I know for a lot of queer people, trans people, whatever your label is, a lot of people are tired of educating, feeling like they're the go-to person for anybody in their life to go. Google's free. I've said that a few times, but at the end of the day, Google isn't going to form a human relationship with somebody. And I think that when you get to know a trans person on a personal level, like Jeff did, you find just a human being, that we're all just trying to live this experience in a way that we feel fulfilled and hopefully respected. But I think that the more we got to have those honest conversations, and the more I felt as though Jeff respected me in the honesty, it became easier and easier to just be real with him and tell him my experience, however I felt he might take it. It is my experience. Nobody's going to take that away from me. Over time, Jeff really showed that he might not understand, but he's willing to learn and he's willing to try to begin to understand in whatever form that comes. So,
I think that's a key thing there. Yeah. Is that them wanting to understand in a way that is respectful versus just making assumptions. Now, Jeff, what was the hardest thing for you to confront or unlearn?
I don't think it was the first haircut, but maybe the second, when I found out that EJ, I'm going to call him Eli because that's his name.
Okay.
EJ is a literary name.
Gotcha.
When Eli told me that he was non-binary, or at that point, I think it was they were, it was the better pronoun.
They, he, either way. Yeah.
And I really didn't know what that meant. I had heard the term, but it was foreign to me. And so I started doing some research on my own and asking some questions of Eli, who was at that point getting pretty free in answering those questions, which I appreciated. But I've always had a thirst for knowledge in anything that I do. And here I was in a situation where I felt totally inadequate in terms of my own information and knowledge. And I wanted to learn more. It wasn't until we got further along, actually, it was when shortly after we started to write the book, and we would meet every week, every once in a while we missed a week. And one day, Eli very proudly showed me his new driver's license that he had changed his name from Liz, which it was at birth, to Eli. And that's when we started talking more about the non-binary was a kind of an umbrella term, and really he was starting to identify more as the transmasculine. And so then I had to relearn that because that was something new to me. And frankly, it was a little difficult for me to understand how to react to that. I joke in the book, and Eli's heard this 100 times, sometimes I didn't know whether to hold the door open for him or slap him on the ass and say, nice game, which I never did, by the way. But there's that confusion from coming from those people around you who don't understand what it means. I wanted to be supportive. From day one, I wanted to be supportive. But it took me a while to learn how to be.
What surprised you most about Eli once you got to know them?
I won't say it surprised me, but it was a very pleasant revelation that he is one of the most honest people I have ever met. And I don't mean that to say he would never tell a lie, which I don't think he would, but there's an honesty that just pervades his being, that when you look at friendships and how they develop, and that's a really endearing quality that you don't find in many people. And maybe it was hopefully because I helped create a pleasant environment as well, an open environment, but really it's him. And And when we started writing the book, it was clear that it's a dual memoir, so there's my life and there's his life. And I hate to say it because it doesn't sound good for marketing, but my portion is like fluff. I've had an interesting life, and I've done a lot of things that most people don't get a chance to do. So in that case, it probably interests some people. But Eli's the star of the book. That's what it's all about.
And Eli, did you have to confront or unlearn something about Jeff and his life and any assumptions that you had made?
Wouldn't necessarily say unlearn, but I did learn a lot, and I still continue to. I think there's something nice about any friendship, any good friendship. There's a give and a take. And while I've been able to help Jeff with some things, Jeff's also helped me with plenty of things as well. I think that another thing beyond that would be when we began to write the book, he became very honest with where he stood, what we were talking about in the beginning about how he came to see me at the shop. When we had those conversations in the beginning, it was a very big reminder for me that my dad's conservative Christian person, and he's in his early 70s, and for years he's used the quote to me, "Can't teach an old dog new tricks," to leave an excuse for why he doesn't want to respect or learn or do anything. And so it was a very big reminder in the beginning of our friendship, and continues to be, that that doesn't have to be the case. People can choose to learn and grow and educate themselves with the world around them, or they can choose to isolate and not do that. And it's a refreshing reminder, and it's been very helpful as a queer person, because I think sometimes we can forget that people can change, people can grow, and people can learn.
Yeah, it's hard, especially in this day and age right now, to remember that. Now, Eli, did you transition before the book, during the book?
My transition has been a little bit more drawn out, I'd say, than some. I have been in the process since, I believe, 2019? I've been in the process of transitioning, I believe, since about 2019 was the first time I really put effort. And with that, you'll read in the book my story, but I had to go to therapy for a little while before I could begin hormones. And so it's a little bit of a drawn out story, but I socially, my friends knew, I think, since about 2018, 2017, but I was still very much coming to terms with my identity at that time.
And what is it that you hope queer readers will feel as they read this then?
For me personally, hope, and that there's a light at the end of the tunnel sometimes.
Just hope it's not an oncoming train.
Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, if Jeff and my friendship can exist, then there's definitely hope for people.
Yeah, I think I probably didn't realize it until after we published the book, but we're really hoping to appeal and have been appealing to some degree to three different markets, really. Certainly the queer community, and what people have told me there's a certain sense of comfort that they feel and validation that others who are not part of the queer community can look at them in a positive light. And certainly everybody needs that in their life. The people who probably make up the biggest part of our marketing effort are those straight people who are struggling to some degree with a queer person in their life, whether it's a child or a sibling or a friend or whatever it happens to be. And they want to be supportive, but they don't necessarily know how. And we get a lot of that in the book signings that we do and the various people we come in contact with. I just had a case a few days ago when I was in Palm Springs playing golf, a gentleman that I had never met before. He was a friend of one of my friends. And we wound up going out to dinner together. And he was telling me that his child, a 22-year-old, was transitioning from female to male. And he loved his child and he wanted to be supportive, but he was struggling. And he had read the book before we met. My friend gave him the book. And he said it really helped him understand how you can feel. Now, it's a little different for him with his own child as it is for me with Eli being a friend. Certainly, there's a difference. But that every time we get into one of those situations, it gives us as the authors of the book validation for why we wrote it. The most important segment of the population who we'd like to have read our book are the people who were like me. But unfortunately, we can't get them to pick up the book. And that's understandable. I get that. But
you think it's the title?
But maybe the title.
Well, so how do we reach those? Because you would what I like to call a sensitive conservative. I grew up in the Midwest, so I grew up, and I feel shameful for saying this, I grew up as a Republican. But back then, Republican meant something different than it does these days. And I still right. want to believe in certain conservative values, like the country and spending and whatnot. How can we help people understand that you can be conservative, but still accepting and understanding and learning and growing?
It's difficult. It took me a while to come to that realization myself. And I really credit Eli with so much of this transition in me. Maybe that's not a word I should use here, but...
But it is. Yeah, it is a transition.
So it is. It definitely is. And as an 18-year-old college student, I campaigned for Barry Goldwater. That tells you something. But I still hold some conservative values close. And the same as you just mentioned, I believe in less government intrusion. I'd like to see taxes lowered. Generally, what has been considered through the years is good conservative values. But I definitely have a hard time seeing where we are today, where the human element has disappeared or at least moved to the shadows. And we no longer have empathy for people. And as a conservative party. That troubles me an awful lot. In fact, having been a registered Republican all my life, a few months ago, I changed my affiliation to no preference because I just can't identify myself as Republican today because automatically people assume if you say you're a Republican that you're a conservative and that you support the president. I don't. It's a difficult world on a lot of fronts.
What conversations do you most hope that this book will spark?
I think that the hope is that it simply sparks conversation because that's healthy. And we have found, I think it's remarkable that virtually 100%, maybe 99% of the response that we've been getting has been positive. I fully expected that we would get hate mail, and I would anyway, but there's been none of that. We have a post office box that's listed on the inside cover of the book, and there hasn't been anything in the mailbox for 2 years. It's really almost comical. But people are curious. Very much the same kinds of questions you're asking of us is what they ask, especially when we do book signings and we have a Q&A afterwards generally, and we get a lot of curiosity. A lot of people don't quite understand how a friendship like ours can not only evolve in the first place, but endure. It's been 4.5 years now, and we're still friends.
That's awesome.
Rocky sometimes, but we're still friends.
But that's what friendships are, right? You accept each other for who they are, 100%. Warts and all is what I say. When you're my friend, everything. I accept you for who you are, and you're going to make mistakes. I'm going to make mistakes. The key thing about friendship is that we understand that we don't do those things out of malice, and we forgive and move forward and learn.
How do we teach that? That's like kindergarten.
Yeah, because kindergartners aren't ruined by what they've learned by their parents and
everything after kindergarten.
They're pure.
How has
I have to tell you, we speaking of the signings that we've done, we had one incident that was particularly heartwarming one time. It was in a private home. We had a good turnout. There were probably 50 people or so there. And we would usually start off with just telling our story and then open it up to questions. And we had a woman who we didn't know. In fact, she only knew one person who was there. That was the host. And she said she had something she wanted to say. And we said, okay. And so she stood up. She was probably in her late 50s or early 60s. And she was a fighter pilot in the Swedish Air Force.
Oh, wow.
And she retired and came to this country about 9 or 10 years ago. And in that time, she never told anybody, never came out to anybody that she was a trans woman. And she decided that evening to come out. And she said that the atmosphere that was created in that room was so welcoming and supportive that she just, on the spur of the moment, decided to do it. That was a real wow moment.
I'm speechless. Yeah. How has your friendship changed the way each of you listen to people?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Yeah. Well, what do you got?
He's gotten more tattoos.
Oh, boy. I have no idea how to answer that one.
Yeah, that's a hard one. I think the more we've learned about each other, the deeper the friendship is. But I don't know that it's changed a whole lot. We really bonded over writing the book. And we both realized that at times writing the book was going to be a little bit painful because it's very honest. The book tells it all. And so there's a certain bonding that goes on when you're sharing your lives together, especially in written form. And it's out there for everyone to see. So I think that's really what's strengthened our friendship, and it's been pretty constant since then. Would you agree?
Yeah. I think that for me, when it comes to listening with other people and stuff, it goes back to remembering that people can learn and people can grow, and it really is important to get to know somebody. And because for a lot of people, when you are unaware of a subject matter, you almost have no emotional connection to it. So building a relationship with people, especially the ones that are unaware of their ever meeting a trans person before, or are aware that they've never met a trans person. But I think that it is a reminder that giving people the time and the space to get to know a trans person and to be a good example of a trans person to people. I try to be more patient when it comes to building a relationship with somebody I might have overlooked or written off before, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. Now, where can listeners get your book, follow you, and support The Old Man and the Queer?
We're available on Amazon. We're not too much in brick and mortar. We're here and there, but Amazon primarily, and also some of the major online book houses, Barnes & Noble, for instance. Easy to find. Just go on Amazon and plug in The Old Man and the Queer, and it'll come up. It's available in both soft cover, hardcover, and ebook.
And any social media?
Yes, but we don't use it as much as we should under it's The Old Man and the Queer, one word.
Yeah, on all formats, it would be under The Old Man and the Queer.
All four social media food groups, as we say.
Yeah.
Excellent. Jeff, Eli, thank you so very much for spending the time to talk to me today. I really appreciate you.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thanks for having us on and allowing us to spread our message.
Yeah, it was nice to chat with you today.
Another reason we love this community.
I'm Daddy Dave, your friend in the fight to end stigma. And I'm the founder of Team Friendly, here today to talk about STIs. STI testing is not a moral failing. It is a powerful form of self-care and emphasizes the importance of knowing your body, caring for your health, and showing respect for yourself and others. Testing supports confidence, clarity, and healthier connections. Routine testing helps create open, honest conversations and reduces fear through knowledge. When someone shares that you might have been exposed to an STI, that's an act of care and trust. Responding with kindness and appreciation strengthens everyone's well-being. A friendly, supportive approach makes these conversations easier and more human. When we normalize testing, we build healthy relationships and stronger communities together.
Pride lives here.
A huge thank you to our guests this week, Jeff and EJ, for joining us and sharing the story behind The Old Man and the Queer. It's a powerful reminder that real change can start in even the most ordinary places, sometimes even in a barber chair. And before we go, we want to take a moment to say thank you to a couple of people who believed in this project early on. A big thank you to Amanda, the tax person, and Dr. James for stepping up and becoming founding 50 members for Gay PHX. Your support helps make this platform possible, and it means more to us than we can put into words. Thank you for believing in what we're building for this community. And to you, yes, you listening right now, thank you. If you're still with us this far in the podcast, it truly means the world to us. The time that you spend listening, sharing the show, and telling your friends about it is what keeps this whole thing alive. We don't take that for granted a single second. GayPHX was built for the community, by the community, and the fact that you're here listening means you're a part of it. If you've got an event, a story, a group, or something happening that our community should know about, let us know. Submit your events, come on the show, and help us keep growing the voices that make Phoenix such a vibrant place to live. And don't forget, the next Grit Pop-Up Party is already on the calendar for March, and if you're planning ahead for your next night, go grab the tickets at gritaz.com. We also invite you to keep the music and conversation going by tuning in to the Gay PHX stream, available 24/7 on TuneIn, Radio Garden, and Radio.net. It's the soundtrack of our city, queer stories, it's local beats, it's real community. Thank you again for being here with us. Take care of each other, look out for your friends, keep choosing community, and if you see us out and about, let's grab a selfie. We love you, Phoenix.
We're together, the sun is bright, and there's no
thanks for hanging out with the Gay PHX podcast.
Be kind.
Be bold.
Be you.